Well, a question arose last week about demons in the Old Testament period. I've lost my reading glasses, so hang on while I get my glasses. I was a little bit surprised as I started doing some more study of demons in the Old Testament period. It appears that the discussion of demons in the New Testament is far more extensive than it is in the Old. In fact, someone has calculated that about a third of the New Testament, in one way or another, deals with casting out demons. I didn't take the time to actually survey that and figure out if that's true, but it does strike me that demons and casting out demons and freeing people from demon possession plays an incredibly important role in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, you really don't find very much about demons. In fact, the Hebrew language doesn't even have a word that corresponds to the word demon. So you really don't see in the Old Testament what you see in the New Testament. Now, some people have suggested that, like Ted suggested last week, that the fact that demons play such an important role in the New Testament is probably due to the fact that when Jesus comes, he's going to bring the ability of demons to possess people against their will to an end. Some major things happen as far as demons are concerned around the time of Jesus' ministry, the ministry of the apostles, and those on whom the apostles had laid their hands to impart the ability to cast out these demons. So it makes sense that if you're fighting for your very life, everything kind of comes to a head when Jesus comes. And demons play such an important role in that, and that's partly indicated by the Old Testament, Zechariah the 13th chapter. Now, I know that demons were understood in the Old Testament period. If they hadn't been understood, you wouldn't have a statement like Zechariah made in Zechariah 13. And Jesus casting out demons while he was here wouldn't have made any sense if they didn't have a prior experience with demons. Just like Jesus brings us baptism. But baptism is an idea that has been extant in Judaism for ages. The ritual washings that they were so familiar with prepared them for Jesus and his baptism just as much as John's preaching prepared them for Jesus and his baptism. John preached baptism, and it wasn't a new idea. It was something that the Jews were familiar with. So when Jesus starts to cast out demons, it's an indication that something is happening that the Jews knew about. Just like they had a concept of Messiah, Jesus didn't bring that concept, but it plays such a major role in the New Testament, because it was the beginning of the Messiah's reign. So it doesn't surprise me then that the Old Testament doesn't have a lot of reference to demons. In the Old Testament period, and some other writers that I have seen commenting on this pointed out that in the Old Testament period, particularly among the Jews, there was no sense that they wanted to recognize demons as having authority. They were a strictly monotheistic religion, and that's the way it was supposed to be. God had said, "I am the only God. There is no other God before me. There's no other God like me." And so they focused on the idea that there is God. And it was like they couldn't talk about demons because that gave them some sense of legitimacy. I don't know whether that's true. I don't know enough about Jewish history to comment on that, but any other thoughts about just in general the existence of demons in the Old Testament period? Anybody at home? And I apologize that this is kind of more lecture than what we have typically done on Sunday evenings, but frankly, it was a learning experience for me. I really never had heard any discussion of demons. Yeah, Bob.
Well, I'm reminded that Saul was troubled by a spirit that would come and go. It was not named as a demon, but it appears to be something similar too.
I think so. And we'll talk about the case of Saul in just a minute. The different words that are used in the Hebrew language to refer, I think, to demons, in many cases are kind of, well, they're descriptive terms. There's one of the terms that's used in the Hebrew to refer to demons, and it's a word that is translated as a hairy chest. I have no idea what that significance of that is, but that's the root meaning of this word. So they call them devils. Deuteronomy the 36th chapter, 32nd chapter, verses 16 and 17. God says the people were provoking him, making sacrifices to devils. So it's pretty much the same idea as the demon at that point. Second Chronicles, the 11th chapter, verse 15, talks about Jeroboam. And Jeroboam calls on the priests to stop making sacrifices to God, and he appointed them to serve in the high places and to make sacrifices to satyrs. That is translated in some translations as devils. So that's Second Corinth or Second Chronicles 11 at verse 15. This is an interesting idea because satyrs, SATYRS, are said to inhabit the ruins along with Lilith. And Lilith appears to be a female demon. Just the word itself is female. inhabits desolate places at night, according to Isaiah 41, or excuse me, Isaiah 34, 14. Another word that's used is a noun. It's not a descriptive term. This time it's a noun, and it's the noun for death. This word is used in Isaiah 28, starting at verse 15 and again at verse 18, where it says, the people made a covenant with death. So they made apparently made an agreement with the demon. Death is again addressed in Jeremiah 9, verse 20, and Hosea 13, in Job 18, and in Job 28. So death apparently was a term that was used to describe demons. Then again, you had another descriptive term. This time, the root meaning of the term is an insatiable bloodsucker. Okay? And this one, too, seems to be female. You see it in Proverbs 36. Excuse me, Proverbs 30, verses 15 and 16. Has two daughters that are never satisfied with the grave, that it's characterized by barren wombs. So those are the kinds of terms that are used to talk about what I think are demons in the Old Testament. Then you had familiar spirits. The familiar spirits is something that occurs a lot in the Old Testament. Leviticus 20, verse 27. 1 Samuel 28, verses 7 and 8. Saul went to the witch at Endor, and the witch at Endor had a familiar spirit. 2 Chronicles chapter 33, Manasseh consulted with a familiar spirit, and this is an interesting idea, because these familiar spirits work with the diviners, people who said that they could tell the future. The oracles, they claim to have this ability. And the reason that I say that that's so interesting, can somebody read Acts 16, verses 16 through about verse 18? Now, this is New Testament period. Somebody have Acts 16, 16 through 18?
Once when we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a female slave who had a spirit of which she predicted the future. She earned a great deal of money for her owners by fortune telling. She followed Paul and the rest of us, shouting, "These men are servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved." She kept this up for many days. Finally, Paul became so annoyed that he turned around and said to the spirit, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her." At that moment, the spirit left her.
Okay. So you've got, this as clearly as what we would describe as a case of demon possession. And this is apparently doing the same kinds of things with this young servant girl that the familiar spirits in the Old Testament did with the witch at Endor and with others. So it's this spirit that enabled them to be fortune tellers. Yeah, Bill.
I've been curious how those this soul, spirit of a righteous person like Samuel could be called back after God has taken him by an evil spirit.
That's has been problematic to me. In the Old Testament period, there are indications that these spirits were able to communicate with God. You remember what happened in Job? Yeah. Satan was able to communicate with God. And it says Satan came into the presence of God along with some other spirits. I don't know how that worked. The only thing I can say is that there was some ability to communicate with God. And, of course, God could call back the dead. But in this case, the familiar spirit persuaded God to call back the dead. I don't know beyond that. Does that answer the question? Not really, but it's the best I can do.
Well, if there's not an answer, there's not an answer.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
But didn't it serve God's purpose to have Saul come back? I mean, that was a plan of God to be able to do that.
Sure.
And I, as I remember it in my memory, not in reading recently, but that she was surprised that she conjured anybody up. So she wasn't used to this sort of situation. So it's more like God is using this to access the...
Yeah. Yeah, the familiar spirit could communicate with God, but the response is always God's. So God could embarrass the familiar spirit by calling the dead back. And that would be an embarrassment to the spirit, because the spirit couldn't do that. But God could. So communication, yes. The same power that God possessed, no. Which is pretty much what we see in the New Testament as well. Communication, but not the power that God possesses. And definitely not using what power they had to do the same kinds of things that God did. God never took possession of a person against their will. For a long time, God made a donkey speak. Okay, so he did something to cause that donkey to speak. He didn't persuade the donkey to speak, but he did something. But he never took control of an individual like that. Okay. Comment, Mandy?
No.
Oh, Bob.
I'm just sitting here going through my mind, what would be the definition of a familiar spirit? Would it mean like our thoughts of being familiar with someone that we already know, or?
You know, I didn't look up the word familiar. I don't know what the definitions are for that. But I know that they're called familiar spirit, and I'm like you. That's got to be a use of that term that I'm not familiar with. That,
okay.
Oh, that was terrible. That was, boy, talk about going in a circle to get a definition. It's something that is not a way that I would ever use that term. Yeah.
If you contrast that to the demons in the New Testament, the demons could take possession. And familiar, to me, really sort of says that you're inviting them in, sort of thing. And maybe that's the difference between the spirits during the Old Testament and the demons. It's just a guess, but.
Yeah. Eileen, you had a comment.
It says, okay. In the Bible, a familiar spirit is the spirit of the dead that mediums summon through necromancy. I can't pronounce that word.
Okay.
Familiar comes from the Latin word familiaris, which means household servant. The idea is that sorcerers had spirits as servants who were ready to obey their command. And then they give Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And so okay. I don't know if this is man's idea or what.
Okay, well, that makes some sense because they did have household gods. And so to say that they were the spirits of the dead, I'm just not sure. Don't know exactly. Bill, you had a comment.
Just an observation. In the thinking medieval times and in early America, black cats were referred to as a familiar of a witch. Like somebody that's always there with them or something that's always there with them.
Okay. That's true. And that may be the original use of the term forbidden. Sort of like they're related as a family. I don't know.
If you talk about Saul, that the spirit came and went. Again, this is
that wasn't a demon,
but it's a spirit, and so it could not demonize him. He could actually struggle and come above it. The harp music that David played soothed him, so he was able to get rid of the spirit. So it seems like there's a difference between the two of them. And what they were able to do here, they might be the same thing, but they couldn't do the same thing.
Yeah. That's First Samuel 16 is the passage that you're talking about. That God withdrew his spirit from Saul, and God allowed an evil spirit to vex his soul at that point. And David could soothe Saul by playing the harp. So 1 Samuel 16 at verse 14. And that raises another issue. You know, as I was reading all of these passages in the Old Testament, it seemed to me that the evil spirit in the Old Testament was controlled not by Satan to do Satan's bidding, but is almost presented as being controlled by God and doing God's bidding. And that could just be a difficulty with language that I'm not as familiar with the Hebrew language as I am, and I'm not real familiar with Greek language, but that could be just the vagaries of language. Okay. You know, we talk about a husband having his wife as if he possessed this person, and that's kind of a vagary of the English language, because we know that your husband doesn't possess you. You continue to remain your own entity, but it could be just that kind of language in the Old Testament, that God had the Spirit, that he owned the Spirit, that it was his. And I can't really comment intelligently on that because I'm not sure that I understand it. But the evil spirit sometimes in the Old Testament is talked about as coming from God. And up until this time, I've always looked at that and said, well, that just means that God allowed it. And maybe that's what it means. But I saw too many people commenting on this, saying that there was a sense in which God was sending the Spirit. And you see it with Paul, or with Saul, where God sent an evil spirit. Don't know. But it does appear to be serving the same function as demons served, or as acting in the same way as demons acted in the New Testament. So I conclude that they were the equivalent. Okay, yeah, Bill.
You referred earlier to Balaam and the ass that spoke back to him.
Yeah, right.
That was actually the angel of the Lord. That was not a spirit.
Right. I was just saying there. I was making the point that God never takes possession of a man against his will to cause him to be saved or to cause him to be lost. And at that point, God took possession of the donkey against the donkey's will, or maybe without the donkey's will, but God took possession of the donkey.
Let me ask a question on that.
Okay.
When Saul joined the prophets and prophesied, didn't God take possession of him then?
I don't know, but these false prophets, these were lying prophets, okay? And they may have had a relationship with a familiar spirit, like the witch of Endor, or like the young damsel in Acts 16. And so, in a sense, Saul joining himself to them would mean that he started listening to the familiar spirit, or having some relationship with the familiar spirit.
Wasn't that before he even became king? As one of the proofs that he was God's anointed?
No, this is after he was God's king. This is after God took the kingdom away from him.
I was thinking of
that he consorted with
him and someone went searching for his father's lost animal. And on the way back, there were several proofs that he was going to be God's anointed. That were supposed to...
Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can find that real quickly. Saul with the prophets. So, hang on. Saul.
1 Samuel 10.
Yeah. 1 Samuel 10, verse 12. So let me end this right here, and I'll come back to it. And I thought I had that on this computer, but I don't. Mandy or somebody, can you read that section? 1 Samuel 10.
What verse?
I think it's about verse 12, I believe.
Start back up before that.
Yeah, back up even before that.
It's about verse 9. Verse 6 says, Samuel told Saul after he anointed him, that and the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shall be turned into another man.
Okay.
So Samuel's telling him what's going to happen to him.
Okay. In that case, I think this is the ability of Saul to speak what God wanted him to speak. That wasn't what I was thinking of. Later, Saul is driven away from God, and he finally goes and he consorts with the prophets. At that point, I think that's the evil prophets.
Later on, when Saul has been rejected, is it Samuel that tells him that God's spirit has departed from him?
Yes. Yes.
So he was given a good spirit by God.
Yes. He had God's spirit. But in many ways, that would be comparable to saying that David was a man after God's own heart. So, yeah. Okay. Let's bring this to a conclusion. You got the information that I have.
My fault.
He's got the weirdest ringtone of anybody I ever knew.
Halloween.
Yeah.
Evil spirit.
Thank you.
That's a great, great way to conclude this discussion of demons. Let's look at Ephesians 6 at verse 12. Can you get somebody to read that?
Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms.
Okay. So this is a struggle that we face. It's described in the same way that Daniel faced this struggle. Look at Daniel 10. And starting at about verse 7 and reading down through verse 21, you see Daniel, after he's fasted 20 days or 21 days, the angel appears to him. And he explains that the moment that he prayed to God and that God had heard him and sent him with an answer, that there was this war that was going on between God's angels and the prince of Persia. Now, I think that prince of Persia is a reference to someone who is not listening to God, but listening to the demons, listening to the devil. So it's a battle that was raging. The way it's presented in Daniel, it's a battle that's raging. It's not here on this earth. It's in the spiritual realm where these beings exist. The demons, the angels, where Satan exists, where God exists. And there are battles that are fought there. They've always been fought there. The angel disputed over the body of Moses. And that's something that happened in this spiritual realm. So whether their impact on the earth was precisely the same in the Old Testament as it was in the New, they have, in my mind, they have always existed. And what they do impacts earth. So we have to battle with this no differently than men in the Old Testament period had to battle with this. Okay. Well, you've got through everything I know about demons in the Old Testament. Did a lot of reading, and there's a lot of conjecture, a lot of people guessing that this was the case. These are the things I'd say for sure. That's about it. So, other questions? If not, we'll go on next week and we'll talk a little bit about, for the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about Satan. Okay. Comments? After that, we'll figure out how we're going to proceed on Sunday evenings. And if you have comments about what you would like to see us do on Sunday evenings, talk to the elders. When Lenny gets back, the elders are going to meet. We'll decide what kinds of things we're going to pursue on Sunday evening. Well, talking about demons and people who listen to evil influences, it's as much a problem today as it has always been. The evil influences cannot take control of us. That was brought to an end, I think, in Zechariah 13, in the day that the mountain was opened to Israel for sin. And that day was the day when Jesus died. It was that period of time. I'm so glad that I live now and not when demons could possess people against their will. It's such a relief to know that Jesus has come and brought that to an end. So if you're struggling with the things that are around us that tend to draw us away from God, understand that you can resist. You will not be taken against your will. God won't allow that to happen. No man can snatch you out of God's hand if that's where you want to start.